Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize if they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets on Blog Talk Radio, and we are a group on allpoetry.com. So you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along with us, read, comment, and join in. And I'm Afasiana, and with me I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going?
All right. I had the day off today because it is a new holiday in Canada, and actually in response to that, I will respectfully acknowledge the Salix peoples of the Okanagan Nation, the traditional keepers of this land that I am on, for allowing us to meet, read, and explore poetry on their traditional and unceded territory. So today is Truth and Reconciliation Day in Canada, and it's basically acknowledging the terrible way that Indigenous people were treated. Especially, in particular, the focus right now is on residential schools, because in the last few years, a lot of those schools have been revealed to have many, many children die at them. And this is not like ancient history, as you might think. It's two or three generations ago. So kind of a shocker to some who, because we weren't taught about it, but it's apparently well known in other circles. So now we are acknowledging that, and we are, you know, trying to treat people better. So today is a bit of a somber day as we acknowledge the horrors, but also, you know, work together. So it has a positive twist of we're better now, I hope. How are you doing?
I think that I'm doing all right. It's been a long day for me. That's good. It's just about over. It's Friday. I think that it's a great holiday. Not that the, you know, what prompted it is great, but I do think that, you know, recognition for the Indigenous peoples are, you know, is important. I think it was not that long ago I made a post, I think on Facebook, about how, you know, where I live now is Lummi land historically. You know, and I had all these people ask me, like, do you live on the res? And it's like, no, I don't live on the res. But, you know, Lummi didn't used to live on the res either. Like,
no.
You know, like historically, this was their land. I mean, they didn't choose to live in like the worst part of the floodplain. They were shunned there.
Exactly.
And I just thought it was so weird that like all these people were like, why are you talking about this? I'm like, because people don't know, obviously.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just think, you know, there's a lot of oversight, a lot of things that get overlooked there. I think it's excellent to have a holiday. I wish the holiday was created, under better conditions, but can't erase time, unfortunately. I think a lot of things would change if you could.
That's true. And we just have to learn from our mistakes. That's the goal of this, I think, education. It is one of those odd holidays, though, in terms of, like, what is considered a holiday, because, like, half the people have it off and not everyone does. Like, I don't know. There are certain holidays, like Christmas, where it's, like, everything is closed, and there are other holidays, like this one, where it's, like, banks and, like, things that are related somewhat to the government and are closed and schools are closed, but there are places, like my husband had to work as a cook, so it's a bit confusing to me, holidays, how there are different layers of holidays.
But. Yeah, I've always found that interesting too. At my job place, we have 6 holidays off. So we get 6 days off paid, and there are a lot more holidays than that. And invariably, people will ask me, like, do we have X holiday? And it's like, no. And then they're like, why? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't set the rules. Like, Veterans Day is November 11th in the U.S. And I just already know people are going to ask me if we have the day off. And no. You know, we work in food manufacturing, so it's not like, oh, other people have the day off, they're going to come visit. You know, it's like, so I don't always have a good explanation for why, other than that's what our employee handbook wrote, and that's what the CEO and owners of the company decided. So.
Huh. Yeah, my husband, because he often works at restaurants, it makes a little bit more sense, because it's like, on some holidays, it's busier in the restaurants because other people are off, so they, you know, gather. But yeah, if you're not, like, in a public-facing thing, it's odd that it would be. Although it depends, because here we don't call it Veterans Day, we call it Remembrance Day, but we also have November 11th. And in BC, where I am now, it's closed. But in Ontario, where I grew up, it's not. It's recognized, but, like, you'll have an assembly at school. School won't be closed. So, I don't know. In some ways, I think that we ended up, you know, benefiting from it more, like, understanding the point of the day back when we did, like, an assembly or learning thing about it on the day rather than just have it as, like, a vacation day. So, I mean, same with the thing today. Whereas some places closed completely, others had, like, training for staff on, you know, how to be more welcoming for the Indigenous population. And, like, that makes sense to me to have that kind of thing. I mean, like, yes, I'm privileged. I have the day off. But also, like, maybe, like, do something with the day. So, anyway, I do not make such calls. It is not within my range. But in honor of my holiday, if you will indulge me, I'm going to read one poem on that subject that I wrote, and then we'll get into the contest.
Absolutely.
I wrote this a year ago, and it was around the time where there were a lot of news stories about the schools, and I was learning stuff about my own school experience that was shocking to me because I didn't understand what was happening there. So this is called Drawn from Their Bones. Nuns' trail of toffee tempted curious youth, churchyard schools, assimilation factories, and truth. Beautiful buildings, whitewashed, colonial, drownings declared strictly ceremonial. Cheerful Nisiliksan chatter twisted into English anguish. Kind, unique spirits declared demons to vanquish. Violets are vibrant where colors allowed to survive, but in the churchyard, it's Viola candesis that thrive. The schoolyard became a graveyard of stolen children, collateral damage of the misguided pilgrim. But the silky flowers grow, the Lord praised for their splendor, soil nourished by blood, and we thank the offender. End poem.
Great read. I love the way that you drew the flowers into this and kind of built in color, you know, while you did it. You know, with that starting line, the quote that you pulled, feeding these flowers with a thin milk drawn from their bones, kind of starts it off with this kind of white palette that then gets kind of filled in as you go through, which I really enjoyed. You know, there's, you know, trails of toffee. You know, well, toffee here is obviously like an actual candy, like a lure, almost like Hansel and Gretel style, you know, this nun being like the witch of the woods almost, and kind of keeps that kind of color theme going, you know, and then the whitewashed colonial drownings, the Viola canadensis, you know, bringing in like the purples and the violets, it brings a lot of color into what starts as very white, very whitewashed, which I think is beautifully symbolic, you know, of what the holidays are supposed to be about, you know, the acknowledgement of people who aren't white colonialists, you know. So I thought that that was beautifully done, you know, and the tying into the history of it. I like, too, that it's not shied away from the role that colonists played in this, you know, the pilgrims and the nuns and, the, you know, the English. It doesn't shy. It's not like, you know, oh, they died, but we're not going to talk about, you know, why. So I think it's well done, and it's very eloquent. The language that was chosen, I think, in addition to being colorful, has kind of a sad youthfulness to it, with the speech, you know, speaking of the schoolyards and the flowers and the, you know, candy. So, but it's also somber because of the context. So I think it was a very well-written piece, Faisiana.
Thank you. The candy has its own story because, like, when I was a kid, the nuns would come once a year and we would make toffee together. And it was celebrating, I think it was St. Catherine's Day. So we would all make toffee to celebrate this saint who was a nun while she was alive. And then I found out last year that the thing that had made her, like, a popular nun was she made toffee, went to the reservations, got the kids to like it, and said if they came to the school, they could have toffee all the time. And she lured people to go to the school. That was what she was – that's what we celebrated by making toffee. And I didn't know that, like, when we were making it. It was just, like, the day that you make toffee. We were celebrating when she stole all the kids by, like, having the toffee. It just baffles me. So when you talk about, like, Hansel and Gretel lure them into the woods, yes, for real. So I was, like, just really upset about that, and I turned it into this. But it's just, yeah. And then Viola canadensis is a beautiful flower, but it only grows above dead things. Or, like, if there's, like, a graveyard or animals that have been buried, that's where that flower grows. So it's a bit morbid, but that's just how I process things. Anyway, that was my kind of personal indulgence at the beginning of the show. I'm sorry. Can you please tell us about your red I almost said costume. Contest.
Absolutely. So I'm doing a color theme series where I go through a rainbow color. I called it the rainbow series. So the first color in this series is red, naturally. So I put some quotes up to help inspire poems that are based on the color red. You know, tell me what red makes you think of. You know, do you see flowers? Do you see blood, a feeling? Whatever it is that you think of when you think of the color red. As always, with these quotes, they're just meant to inspire. They're not a limitation. They have another aspect of the color red. Teases your brain and brings words to your pen. By all means, use them. So, without further ado, the quotes. So the first quote is, "The pure red of which certain abstractionists speak does not exist. Any red is rooted in blood, glass, wine, hunters' caps, and a thousand other concrete phenomena. Otherwise, we would have no feeling towards red and its relations." By Robert Motherwell. Second quote, "And now she lies flat on her folded arms, face down and towards the dust in her red mouth leans, and it is full of silence, like all red things." Three, "A study in scarlet, eh? Why shouldn't we use a little art jargon? There's the scarlet thread of murder running through all the colorless skein of our life, and our duty is to unravel it and isolate it and expose every inch of it." By Arthur Conan Doyle. "The true color of life is the color of the body, the color of the covered red, the implicit and not explicit red of the living heart and the pulses. It is the modest color of the unpublished blood." By Alice Meynell. "When I am dead, I hope it may be said, his sins were scarlet, but his books were red." By Hilaire Belloc. And If one says red, the name of color, and there are 50 people listening, it can be expected that there will be 50 reds in their minds, and one can be sure that all these reds will be very different. By Joseph Albers. Red protects itself. No color is as territorial. It stakes a claim, is on the alert against the spectrum. Michael Derek Elworthy. The pure red of which certain abstractionists speak does not exist. Oh, fine, that's that repeat one that I couldn't find earlier. And then, a symbol of red is redder than a bucketful. By Hermine Keats. So those are the quotes. I'm also going to give a little apology today if my voice seems a little thin. What was supposed to be 2 hours of on-site training today that I led ended up being 4.5. So my voice is kind of tired.
Poor babbler. Well, since your voice is so tired, I'll read this next one. You take a breath, have a glass of water.
Thanks. I brought a water bottle with me today.
Good. You need it. The Color of Time by G.A. Grimm. Painted in lipstick, smudged as we wrestle with our clothes and chance, its crimson pools as the machine of war unleashed takes its stance. It rages on, aflame, burning those we love with our anger. It is strength, a shield that can also protect them from danger. End poem.
Wonderful read. I love that the mind instantly went to lipstick, because when I thought of red as well, when I was thinking of inspiration for this poem, that's also where my mind went, was to lipstick. And I also found it interesting that as we wrestle with our clothes and chance, you know, you instantly kind of know that it's like a very romantic scene, you know, smudged lipstick and wrestling with clothes. But then it turns immediately to something more violent. You know, it's crimson pools as the machine of war unleashed takes its stance. Like, that doesn't seem like anything romantic. You know, it now seems very violent, you know. So unless you have, like, a very over-inflated sense of your own virility, I would not, you know, make that necessarily a cross leap, you know. Then burning those who love with our anger, you know, so it kind of gets at the idea that, like, that rage of war will kind of overpower the love, that it has, like, negative effects on love, and then turns in the fourth stanza to, it is strength, a shield that can also protect them from danger. So I love that it's like this dual-sided nature of red, like the anger and blood and violence, as well as like the love and passion and protective aspects, and they kind of clash and are like intermingled. Like, you can protect the things you love because you're violent, but that doesn't mean that love is unscathed by that violence and anger. Like, they're interrelated. I really enjoyed this write. It's fairly short, but I think it takes a really good juxtaposition of, like, what red can mean. So, thank you, G.A. Grimm. I enjoyed this write. But, Daisiana, what do you think?
I liked that it explored the different sides, and I think they can all be compared to passion. It's like there's the physical passion of, like, the sexuality of the first stanza. There's, like, that kind of, when it's talking about the machine of war, it makes me think of, like, passionate patriotism, like, off to do whatever battle. And then the rage, it's like a different kind of passion. It's like giving in to anger. They all seem to be like the extremes of the moment. The last stanza kind of brings it together for me. It's like the passion of anger and patriotism might be put towards, you know, protecting those you love. You think my anger is going to be, you know, to protect someone, and then it ends up being hard on them too. I was just watching some cop show, kind of half paying attention, and there was a thing where, it's a fictional story, there was a girl who got raped, and then her dad and her brother kidnap the guy who did it, and they kill him in front of her as, like, punishment, and they think, like, we did this for her. But she was horrified. Like, that's not what she, you know, there was not healing for her to watch. So it was like, I mean, I know this is a fictional thing, but it was just sort of like that whole, like, our anger will protect her honor. And it was like, no, it just hurt her more. So that last part where it was talking about it can be there to protect. I don't know. I just, for some reason, my mind went there. But I like that this poem went to different sides of the red. And I did like that it started with the lipstick, and particularly if the lipstick is smudged, because that really creates a visual of, you know, the red escaping the lines of the lips. And red escaping the lines seems to be the whole thing of, you know, you notice blood when it has escaped the lines that it's supposed to stay in. It's no longer in the veins. You notice rage if it has escaped your control on it. So it's like something about things coloring outside of the lines can work on multiple levels, and having the lipstick smudged sets the tone for that.
I like that, the idea of not just the smudging with the passion, but the smudging of, like, the violence of it. I really like that point. Yeah. Just the interwoven. Yeah, and I don't know, for me, I guess it didn't feel particularly patriotic, except for maybe in, like, almost like that post-war patriotism, you know, like they thought they were doing good, but they were doing harm kind of standpoint. But I really enjoyed your comment. Like, I liked the poem. I think it was well done. Where are we off to next, with Aviana?
There's one from Blue Leader 1 for you to read.
Sorry, my mouse got dysfunctional there for a second. This is Untitled 187. By Blue Leader 1. I am red, 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 I said, but I am not dead. I am not Fred. I have a red hand that I shout into, red-handed, red rage, red con, red zone, recon, rabid, ready killer. Or am I? Dunno. Red hot skies I melt into, red skies at night I promised to, red skirts and bubble gum, so yummy, so much fun for my tummy. Ha. End. This was interesting. The repetition is wild. It almost sounds like being, like, in a crazed, manic state, you know, like, not quite sane. Maybe not, like, completely insane either. Like, I've certainly done this kind of random wordplay in my head. But I really like the use of the red as the starting point, and then to just go into some rhymes and then just be like, I don't, you know, the or am I? I don't know. Kind of says, like, it's like getting lost in the wordplay, getting lost in the feeling of it, but then being like, I don't really know what I'm talking about. You know, I have a red hand. I find that really interesting that that's capitalized. I'm not sure the purpose of the capitalization, but it makes me think that there's, you know, a purpose to it, like some kind of reference that I don't quite understand. And then it goes into wordplay again with, like, different meanings of the word red that are used in like, common idioms. You know, red-handed, red rage, red con, red zone, recon, rabid, ready killer. You know, like, really just kind of, again, digging into the usage of the word red in different ways that it's used in the English language. But then again, backing out of it again. Or am I? I don't know. It's almost like a teasing kind of game, you know. It almost feels like cat and mouse with a concept. You know, again, with the red hot skies and just kind of melting into that again. And then so yummy, so much for my tummy. Ha. Like, it's all just a game. It almost reminds me of, like, the crazy canoe scene from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You know, where it's like they keep rowing and rowing and rowing without knowing which direction that they're going, you know, like just getting lost in the insanity of a moment, especially with the referencing to, like, the tummy. And then it's interesting because it's bubble gum, which you're not even really supposed to swallow. So not that it's going to kill you or sit in your stomach forever or 7 years or any of that. You will digest it, but it's not really meant to be eaten either. So I thought this was fun. It was fun, and yet, like, it was fun in, like, a red rum kind of way. So I enjoyed it. Thank you, Blue Peter 1. Adesiana, your thoughts?
I enjoyed it, too, and the repetition was fun. I for some reason, I really liked the said. It's like, it reminds us that the repetition was done before. Like, it's like, I repeated it. It feels like meta when it says that. And I like that it does question, am I? And you wonder if it's questioning for themselves or if it is playful, questioning the reader or whoever they're with. I really liked the sound of recon rabbit ready killer. That's really fun. I mean, like, there are lots of R's in general, so it could be alliteration, but just that particular part, recon, rabid, ready, killer, I liked. And then when it talked about red skirts and bubblegum, for some reason, the red skirt I pictured was, like, 50s style, and it had, like, it was, like, the pinup with the big bubblegum bubble, and I don't know how to explain it, but I have this particular image in my mind that came up with that. Mm-hmm. I was like, so yummy. And the yummy was like the gum, but also like the woman in the picture was yummy. I don't know. It was this really vivid mental image that probably wasn't intended, but I was just like, oh, yeah. So I found it very striking. as much as it could be just my imagination. I really enjoyed it. I liked the repetition. I liked the questions. And tummy is just fun. It's fun to say.
It is fun. I think it's well done. And, you know, it's funny. I also pictured, like, the 1950s knee-length, like, T-length poodle skirt going on as well with, like, the victory roll hairstyle. For whatever reason, just something about the skirt and the bubble gum, I saw 1950s for sure. Like this, the pop, the pinup.
All right, absolutely. Not just me.
If it wasn't intended, it was effective anyway.
Yeah.
So, that is certainly also where my mind went. So, same page as you.
All right. That's a dangerous thing to be on the same page as me.
Where are we at?
All right. I'm going to read one by M. Sai Ulo the Don called Superhuman Town. A rose that thorns the summer scene into whatever fort she is of mankind's queen. She comes from distant stars in the land of sand, and when she has changed upon her attire, she is of the super spree band. In this day and age, we need of more from what the tales tell us of the fight against mankind's gore. Wherein people are in the estate of war, in the crimson of red that stains the floor, I could have told you the story for all long too tall, where tales of her are in the spewing into our hearts of soul, she is with cape as crimson red. To dictate the fantasies to any man of bolds, in any memory we turn into vintage hold, to remember the tale's phantom of blood-stained mold, the world needs more vigilantes in the like of her role. But we, able to find them, like the ancient scrolled, it takes intake we take from written form. There are paintings made of her in the red, white, blue shern. She is a patron to all humankind, and when you cry out for help, she is there you in to find. The myth portrays us to the scene that she is as lovely as any superhuman being. Her attire is just as flash, red all around with some blueness and dash. Whenever I think of her, I come to turn of mash, since she kisses me in my dreams, one to the next one's last. I think of her attire and see the red in its red, white, blue roots. I see the flag as colonized to the red in any estate is the American bled. That I see this woman all around, every single woman or girl is in the profound, to be called as super in the scene, because she can be someone's or my personal precious queen. So I predict myself of the healing, that this world puts you in place thereupon, because of the life we live and the rashness of our storm. If we feel hold to turn, love is the redness and the love in the groan. The superhumans are all around, till you receive the heatness of my crown, superhuman town, red cape, and poem.
Great read, Aphasiana. I'm always fascinated with Lula the Dawn's emphasis. You know, there aren't line breaks like you would see in standard poetry. But instead, there are the syllable that would be normally the end of the line is emphasized and stressed either via capitalization or rhyming. You know, a scene and queen, sand, they just kind of, and band. There's always, it's in there. And it's almost rhyming couplets, but they're rhyming phrases. It's not even necessarily a sentence. So I just found that really fascinating. And the stress of the capitalized words, the emphasis. I think you did a really good job reading that as well. And I also thought this was a little bit of an interesting walk through mythology and kind of subtlety, It starts with a rose, which, people will think of the red rose, and then they think of the red queen, and then it goes, into superheroes. It says super spree, and it just kind of keeps going. It talks about war. It talks about gore, and you think of blood, and then, the red that stains the floor. And it leads through all these different versions of red and kind of flirts with the topic of the piece, and for a bit here, when I was reading through it, I was thinking Little Red Riding Hood, sometimes just gets abbreviated to red, she is with cape as crimson red. I picture Little Red Riding Hood. And then I feel like there was a moment in here too, where I again pictured almost like that 1950s pinup girl, the vintage hole, and paintings of her made in red, white, blue. I picture different versions of women that have been associated with the color red. And then finally it gets into more specifically the superhero topic, which I believe is Supergirl or Superwoman. But I'm pretty sure it's just Supergirl, I think is what it's called. And the you know, how it's like a personal hero, how representing patriotism and women and how, you know, all of her strengths. And then it talks about how anyone can be Superwoman because everyone has the ability to, you know, love strongly enough. And then again, we're tied into love, which is yet another thing that's associated often with the color red, with the red hearts and things like that. So I thought this was really interestingly done. It took it through several versions and interpretations of the color red, and then especially with the focus on Supergirl, which I found particularly interesting because I don't necessarily think of the color red. But clearly, the author here does. So, great job. Very interesting piece. As usual, the structure always fascinates me. People who think so differently. I kind of like puzzling backwards on how things appear to other people. So, thank you so much for the write. Athesiana, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, the similar things struck out to me as well. The format, it's kind of an eyeful as the reader because there are no line breaks. So trying to make sure I'm staying in the right place as I'm reading. As the rhymes hit at unusual spots, but it's kind of like a nice surprise in a way because it will just be like, oh, that's rhyming, where you can't, like, at a glance see that there's about to be a rhyme. There are definitely some interesting choices of capitalization. Sometimes the whole word is capitalized, and sometimes the first letter is capitalized, even though it's not the beginning of a sentence or a proper noun. And so I did try to emphasize those words, but sometimes I wasn't sure that I should be. But it seems like they were all keywords that were being emphasized. There was one place where I thought it was clever that it could work both ways. Oh, vigilantes in the like of her role, and it's spelled R-O-L-L, capitalized, but I think it also would work with role, R-O-L-E. So I kind of wondered if that was capitalized, like, to point out, like, hey, this has multiple meanings, pay attention to this word. Oh, my computer just fell asleep. There we go. I went too long without touching it. And yes, it goes through different, I think, different people and characters, not just Supergirl, even though that's a picture that he includes. But there's, when it talks about a red cap and boots, I mean, Supergirl does not have a cap. She has a cape that it talks about other times. But I think when he's talking about the red cap and boots, that's someone else, and I'm not entirely sure who, but there's a few different things, and I could see how you would think about Red Riding Hood as well, because she also has a red cape. It's fascinating format. And then one part that I noticed, there is a section that the text is red, and I was wondering about that, and then I went over it with my mouse, and it's a link. So that takes us to another poem they have that also talks about red. So I think we should read that too. The Return from sure. F All. It's fall, but it's broken up. The F All. As leaves do fall, I hear the crisp, the air in the mist of a summer at risk. But in the evening noon comes the sun so soon. To lighten the mood, forget not that we are in delight of the color Blut, crimson blood in Austrian. The height may feel as in the surreal, as dozing zone, the leaves move along in height so clear, the summer steer of what was produced in the summer, now autumn, makes of it non-used, but life comes to an end and begins to ascend. It takes the form of what goes to earth must return. In fees, the life begun. So too is autumn, but a reality which is in life thus sung. End poem.
Great read. Yeah, and it's kind of cool moving from one poem to another poem. That's a really interesting concept. I'm kind of fascinated by it. Now I'm kind of tempted to be linking myself and see how I can do something like that. Interesting way to use the format. I like it. And this one is interesting to me because there are breaks. There are line breaks here, not only line breaks, but semicolon punctuation that kind of neatly divides it up for the reader. So I find that very fascinating. To see a different format, and then of course the piece itself, to be in fall, as the leaves do fall, I hear the crisp, the air in the mist of the summer at risk. I like the concept of fall putting summer at risk. You know, it's not like, oh, summer turns to fall, or it's the flowing of a season. It's like a threat, like those early days of fall, which is really timely right now, because it is like, this is the time that they're talking about. The leaves are like mid-turn here right now, which I love. And then, to take that kind of violence again, the forget not that we are in the delight of the color blue, being blood, the blood red. And it sounds like very, again, like threatening, the delight of the color blood. It's interestingly violent and yet appreciative of the beauty at the same time. It's almost like an appreciation of violence, the violence of fall. Which I have never really thought of as a concept before, but I really enjoy it. It's not that summer turns to fall, but it's like fall murders the summer, which I find delightfully dark, especially considering that fall brings with it like Halloween and kind of our creepy season, the spooky season. So I really enjoy that. And then the end of the piece, of course, giving that nod to it's required, death is required. Things can't come again if they never leave. So you need things to die. So I really enjoyed it. I thought this was very well done. Very interesting. Thanks for the double poem. And sigh, whoa. What did you think of Baziana?
I think you covered the points that I would say. I also love the idea of summer at risk, and the blute. I really like that blute was explained, because I wouldn't have known that. And the delight of the color of blood, it really does have that kind of like ominous feeling that fits the Halloween spooky season. And I liked what was produced in summer, now autumn makes of it non-used. It's not just like, it grew in summer and now it's fading. It's like, no, autumn makes of it non-used. It's like, yeah, you can't have this anymore. The fruit now falls. It's just like, I'm just picturing autumn like brushing it off like, nope, none of that. It gives it an attitude and really like personifies the season, and I feel like this could be a prompt of now I want more people to write about that, of like the aggressive fall. I really enjoyed it, and I like that this was linked in the other one, and same as you, I'm like, now I want to try this, like having links from things to things. I often link things in my AN, like I'll say, like, this was part of this series or something like that, but I never think about it like within the poem having connections. That might have to become a thing. All right, Ula Ladan, you are inspiring us to go into whole new rabbit holes of once you start reading the poem, you must continue on to various other ones.
I kind of like the threading. I think the threading is great. And I just love that, like, Paul is a violent asshole in this version. I think that's a totally new concept for me. So, well done. Well done.
Agreed.
All right. I see you've popped the next one up on the board. I believe
mm-hmm.
it is my turn to read.
It is.
This is My Cardinal Collapse by Daniel Descino. Sailors sing and dance on distant waves, and their voices romance the air which I breathe. Amidst the crimson of evening skies, the world is a fading pink, longing to be red. And I heed the passionate call of adventure and cage myself in metal with a hidden fossil fuel flame. And so a simple drive on a quiet night attacks me unprovoked and forced to stop, unable to park, unable to enter, flashed at incessantly from other drivers to slow down. My face flushed, my skin hot, car angrily abandoned, and I walk, radiating of heated infrared, until a fire hydrant stops my march to remind me of the fragility of life. And I cool as my gaze turns back to the ever, as its hidden thorns unleash innocent fingers' blood, only to disappear in the iron dirt below. And the shadow world sunset that comes leaves me colorblind and searching. It's only the electric dreams of modern man that still live, as a zombie unresting to program my unprotected memory. It is then I miss the sunrise most. That is when I see what is too much for my overly accosted mind, a truly modern day monster, monopolizing multi-chromatic menace, drowning streetlights, disrespecting night, murdering moonlight. A McDonald's sign glows in blood-red dissonance, married with a sister color of serenity, is an abomination rainbow, a true sign for the symbolism of greed, waste, and gratification. Bloodshot, my mind burnt and bruised. From the coral chaos, I admit defeat in a realm of rash and reckless red, and sleep secure solace, and I dream of rainbows and the colors beyond. End poem. I really liked this write. There was something eerie about it that almost reminded me of really almost classical writing. Oh gosh, why can't I think of it? Who that wrote Call of Cthulhu? Sounds a lot like
Lovecraft.
This when I read his work.
Lovecraft.
It sounds very Lovecraftian, with this kind of undercurrent of creeping, and it's almost poetry. Like, his is almost poetry. This is poetry. But when you read Lovecraft, it almost reads like poetry. I feel a very similar vibe in this piece because there's this underpinning of tension and doom, in a way. And you're just kind of waiting for the hammer to drop, and it never really does. So I think it's really well done in that respect. Like, there is a very major tension in this piece. I also love the frequent references to red throughout, you know, the crimson of evening skies. But I also love that it says the world is a fading pink, longing to be red. Especially when I think of crimson, like the crayon color. You know, it's one of those... I drew a lot. I still draw a lot. When I was a kid, my main thing I drew with was crayons. And I liked to have the huge box, like the bigger the crayon box I could find. Like, that's the one that I wanted. The one that had, like, as many colors of red as possible. And I always found crimson, you know, I always thought of, like, this really bright, vivid red. But it's really got quite a bit of purple in it. It is almost like a kind of pink. So I particularly liked that reference, like crimson skies becoming a fading pink. It's already kind of pink. And then pulling that into passion, which is, again, like another color red. I also love the use of alliteration with the fossil fuel flame. Just feels really good to read that repetitive letter, and it flows together nicely. I also like the flashed out incessantly from other drivers to slow down. I just can just picture all these other people like, hey, crazy, like you're driving like a madman, and like flashing their lights at you. Thought was a really weird way to get people's attention when I'm driving. It always makes me anxious, like, are they flashing at me? What am I doing wrong? Are my headlights on? And then my face flushed. So again, you've got the redness again. And now we've got anger mixed in, which is like another kind of red. And then it goes into infrared. And then fire hydrant, which is another red. It just goes from one to the next to the next. You know, roses and blood and iron. Which is really fascinating. And then when I read the line, it's only the electric dreams of modern man, I of course think of, you know, Do Electric Sheep. Why can't I think of the book title? My brain with titles today.
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep.
There it is, yes, by Philip K. Dick. It makes me think of that instantly, which, you know, then, you know, of course, pulled me into, like, Blade Runner world, because Blade Runner is based on that book, which has then kind of continued through here as well, like, you know, with the, zombie unresting to protect my unprotected memory, kind of still bringing you into that electronic reference. And then, you know, with the McDonald's sign and the greed and the bloodshot eyes. And a little bit, and too, with the sleeping secure solace and a dream of rainbows and the colors beyond. It's like is it a brighter world or is it one steeped in more of this modern greed? I found really fascinating, especially in the context of a Philip K. Dick reference. So overall, I really enjoyed this piece. It's just reference after reference that I like. It pulls my mind into a lot of different imagery that I greatly enjoy. So, thank you, Daniel. Wonderful, wonderful write. But, Adriana, your thoughts?
I really love this. And in the line where it says, longing to be read, you can also think of that as, like, longing to have someone read it. I know it's not spelt like that, but longing to be read makes me think about, like, he's looking at the sunset, wanting to have his adventures, you know, appreciated. I like how the quiet night attacks me unprovoked. I love that. It's like he went out just to have a relaxing time, and then attacked by the experience of this quiet night. Also the wording of how he describes getting into a car, cage myself in metal. it's a very dramatic and interesting way of talking about going for a drive. Like you pointed out, I really like that he makes his face red without saying red. My face is flushed, my skin is hot, so you can imagine that he's turning red. One of my favorite parts was when it's talking about the light. Where is it here? Here it is. Disrespecting night, murdering moonlight. I often feel that way about city lights. That they're not letting you experience night, really. It screws up our sleep patterns and so many things to have all this artificial light it's so much more restful and real when you're away from all of that. So disrespecting night by lighting everything up, murdering moonlight. I really like that. And also when he writes, my overly accosted mind. And as someone who has sensory overload, I love that line so much. My overly accosted mind. That's what I feel like. It's too bright. It's too loud. Just go away. I love the way that he puts it. And then to make the McDonald's sign into that whole stanza there is really smart. And he talks about the symbolism of it, the greed and waste and gratification and, you know, the problems of the world summed up by a McDonald's sign, and how its glaring light just, you know, contributes to that murdering of moonlight, that disrespect of true night. I thought this was fantastic. It's very intelligent and, like, philosophical and yet direct. He's so good at that, at making a piece very thoughtful, but using plain language so anyone could understand it. I really love Daniel's writing.
I agree with you about, like, the night not being the same in the city. You know, having grown up in the woods, like, without even electricity, I remember sitting out at night and looking up at the sky and seeing an unreal number of stars. And I could even see, like, the Milky Way, you know, like, the color. It has color. And now, like, when you're in an actual city, you can't see anything. Like, there's no star. You can't see nothing. You look up, there's nothing there. But even if you go to where it's considered, like, rural in a lot of places, it's like, yeah, I can see some stars, but that's nothing. And I don't think people quite understand, like, just how much light pollution there really is. And it is really kind of sad, you know, because I think about, like, wow, the skies that people saw even just a few hundred years ago are so vastly different than the skies we see now. You know, how many generations now are there people who mostly don't know, they've never seen, you know, all those stars that haven't been appreciated? Anyway, just a thought, but I agree. It does murder the night. Like, it is not, you know, it's a different kind of nightlife, I'll tell you that. Wonderful comment. What do we have going on now?
Okay, I am trying to add Mr. M, or Robert M, to the studio. So, I'm just, 1 second, I'm trying to add him in. I think I allowed him to, I'm trying to sneak around the way of making long distance calls, not long distance, but I'm not totally sure how to do that. Okay.
I am of no help.
I think I have done it, but I've never done that before, so I don't know. All right. Hopefully he will join us. In the meantime, I need to copy this again. Okay, here we go. I have a poem by Debasis Verma, and it's called Black. Stars are blinking, and far up, I see the clouds are floating. I feel the gentle breeze. I see the tulips in moonlit nights. I sense a seamless silence amid the soft murmurs of slumbering leaves. I behold the dried cloths all hanging from the rope that haunts my mind for tomorrow. The light of the pole has lost its glow. A cycle is chained to the broken window. Nearby, a man is sleeping all alone. He is resting his head on a tattered jute roll in accord with his simple soul. I am awake for what I do not know. Trying to sleep like him, gathering my pillow, I stretch my legs. I bend my spine. I take a sluggish yawn and wait for the onset of dawn, switching off my favorite iPhone. End poem.
Wonderful read. And what a contrarian piece. You know, this theme being red and just, I'm going to go with another color. That's a choice. I did really enjoy the write. You know, I found it fascinating, again, that stars are mentioned and that the moon is mentioned again. You know, it's interesting how red, I think, invokes for some reason. I think it goes like people envision the sunset and then they envision nighttime. And I find that really fascinating that there's such a link there between the two. There's some really beautiful language in this. You know, the stars are blinking and the clouds are floating. And there's tulips in the moonlit night. So it's like a spring night, which isn't going to be super warm. Like, there's still quite a bit of chill in a spring night, at least here. And to be listening to slumbering leaves. And I just picture them, like, quietly rustling and kind of soft breeze. And just the sound of that. Also, looking at all the dried clothes hanging from the rope, you know, all the clotheslines, you know, I think of not here, but like other places, you know, like in the Middle East or India or places that are just more crowded or warm, you know, even like Greece, you know, not too many people hanging their clothes out to dry here in the lovely Pacific Northwest when you never have any idea when it's going to rain. It's not a good bet. You don't see a lot of that. You do sometimes in some nice dry summers, but not enough that I think it'd be a common evening walk witness. And then even then, most nights you're going to get quite a bit of dew. So, but it gives me a sense of another place, you know, a different location. And to watch, you know, the lights kind of fade and just make quiet observances of, like, the evening, you know, the bicycles and someone sleeping. Sounds like a homeless person sleeping in the park. And to not really know why you're awake, you know, just to be unable to sleep, insomnia, you know, and not being able to stop looking at your phone. So I think it's a weirdly comforting, right? I think everyone's kind of had an evening like this, or at least most people, where you're just finding yourself kind of wandering in a late evening and just kind of enjoying it. Although I think the language in here is really gorgeous. There is some really subtle rhyming done as well, and slight off rhymes that I enjoyed. You know, you've got tomorrow, glow, window. And while those aren't like particularly complex words, because of the rhythm and pacing of this piece, that they don't hit hard. It's almost like a soft rhyme. So I think it's really well done in that way too. You know, soul, no, pillow, spine, dawn, and phone. Like, dawn and phone, you wouldn't think would rhyme particularly. They work almost as an off-rhyme because of, like, the similar vowel sounds, especially if you match it with an accent, you know, like dawn and phone. Like, you can really make that sound closer than it is, which I think ties this together phonetically nicely. So, lovely piece, the Bashish. Your thoughts, Luciana?
Well, before I comment, I want to welcome Robert to the show. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Did you get a chance to hear the poem?
Did you hear this?
No, someone was talking to me. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I can go read it and then comment after you, probably.
All right. I will comment next. No problem. I really liked soft murmurs of slumbering leaves. Like, leaves don't necessarily slumber, but that's just so peaceful to me. Soft murmurs of slumbering leaves. Just thinking of them, like, with the wind, just the gentle breeze that it talks about in the line before, making the leaves just kind of rock gently and make those little murmurs. I'm like, lulled to sleep just hearing that, because it just sounds so peaceful and beautiful. And it's funny, because it's all about context, because, you know, leaves making noises can be startling if you're, like, walking in the woods and then there's a leaf noise and you're like, oh, there's something over there. And yet it can also sound, like, super relaxing. So it really depends on how it's put. And he makes it sound so calming. And, like, the broken window seems like it would be, like, an ominous thing again. But I don't feel the fear. It has, like a calm kind of feeling all throughout. And when I read I'm Awake for What I Do Not Know, I kind of originally was thinking it was like the things that I don't know keep me up at night because there's so much that I need to learn or that I'm scared that I don't know it. And then I realized I don't think he means it like that. I think he means it like I don't know why I'm awake, which is totally different. But it just makes me think about how interesting the English language is, where it could have two very different meanings with just saying the same thing in a short line. So that makes me think about language. And then, yeah, the not being able to sleep, but staring at your phone and trying to make yourself turn it off, I think that's relatable. You know, I'll be looking at my phone knowing, like, this is not going to help me sleep. But at the same time, I don't put it away because once I, like, lay there in silence and dark, my mind goes spiraling elsewhere. If I'm on the phone, I can focus a little bit and then, like, distract myself. So maybe I'll get sleepy. And it's, like, this guilty cycle of not doing it properly. So I think he's calling us all out. But, yes, Babbler, at the beginning you said this is, like, kind of a contentious piece because he chose to write about black. The contest is red. All the quotes are about red. So he's like, you know what, I'll write about black. That's kind of hilarious that he's just like, screw you and you're red. Let's go a different way. That's,
you know what red makes me think of? Black.
Red is the new black. Black is the new yeah. Red. Okay. I like the rebelliousness of it. I do.
I like your comment, too, on the I'm awake for what I do not know. I love that, because then you're just, like, going from one random Google search to another, like, huh, what's that? Huh, what's that? What's that about? What's that? And the next thing you know, it's 4 a.m. I don't think that's the intent either, but I love that as the concept, to just be so curious about everything that you can't sleep. Well, wonderful comment. Robert, your thoughts? Did you get a chance to read it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, this to me is I love, like, environmental poetry, like poetry that kind of pulls you into the scene that they're setting so easily, like, because this is very relatable, and except, you know, the broken windows, like Faziana said, and things like that. But where he says, the light on the pole has lost its glow. A cycle is chained to the broken window. Nearby, a man is sleeping all alone. He's resting his head on a tattered jute roll in according with his simple soul. You know, so he's not only, you know, speaking for himself, but he's also observing this other man and kind of including him in the whole scenario. And I like that the setting up, like the beginning was beautiful when he says, stars are blinking and far up I see clouds are floating. I feel the gentle breeze. I see the tulips in the moonlight. And I love flowers and I love moonlight. So that really kind of, that already just pulled me in. And then the whole feeling of slumbering and relaxing and enjoying the sounds of the environment while doing the forbidden dance with the iPhone before sleeping. So, yeah, I get that a lot because I do the same thing. I mean, I'm trying to sleep, and I'm like, man, I can't sleep. So I pick up my phone, and I look at my phone, and like how busy I'm said, it's the same thing. You know, we're all guilty of it. Well, a lot of us are. And I think this is a very relatable and humanistic piece, and it's also very beautiful in its delivery. So, yeah, he did a great job.
Yeah, environmental poetry can be so soothing. It almost feels like a meditation sometimes, you know, if you can envision it well enough, if you can see it. I think that does a great job here. I love your phrasing, too, like the forbidden dance of the iPhone. It sounds so much dirtier than it is. But
yeah,
I do
be.
Really enjoy it. Like, I love that phrasing on your comment. What do we have up next?
Babbler, I have your piece up for that contest.
This is red. Pressing the blunted bullet against the center of my mouth, drawing crayon swirls slowly outward, filling in the palette pink. Colored trails spiraling wider and wider until drawn upwards, slashed through nose bridge, chin, eyelid, waxy red war paint tracing over the salt flats long dried. Smile bends just shy of grimace. Screaming war cry, mouth cannot give breath to. End poem.
Wow, that was powerful, Babbler. I mean, starting off in the first line with a blunted bullet. And, you know, even if a bullet is blunt, it's still going to hurt. I say as someone who uses combat arrows, which is like sort of like playing tag with arrows because they're not sharp, so you're not going to kill the person, but ow. And also like blunt swords. So a blunt bullet, if shot, would still potentially kill you, at least would be, you know, quite violent. Even if it's not sharp. So as much as I don't know about guns, blunted bullet gives me pause. And the alliteration of it, blunted bullet, sounds really good. Drawing crayon swirls slowly outward is a really fascinating image. But except that I'm thinking about it in red, so that would be the blood coming out of you because of the bullet wound. And that's alarming, but I'm picturing it in, like, the crayon waxy texture, which I can't decide if it makes it more gross or just, like, really artistic. but it's fascinating image, filling in the palette pink. You just paint such a vivid image with the spiraling wider and wider. But then you get back into the violence of it, slashed through the nose bridge, chin, eyelid. And that reminds us this is not playful crayons. This is, you know, shocking violence. Waxy red war paint. And that makes it, I'm like lost in the visual image of it. And then salt flats long dried, that hits hard because it's like those tears that, you know, you stopped crying a while ago because you gave up. So you used to cry. There were all of this, there's like the salt trails of the past pain. But then that led to this bullet in the mouth. Smile bends just shy of a grimace. Like every line in this hits me, and I cringe away from the violence, and yet I lean forward because I need to know what's going to happen next. And it's just such a powerful visual that you create. So very intense read. That took me by surprise, and you're magical. okay. Mr. M, what did you think?
I was going to say painted, but yeah, I guess painted would be appropriate. It painted a very disturbing piece, very vivid, brutal in its description, and you know, waxy red war paint. I really like that phrasing, and the tracing over the salt flats, long dried. You know, and smile bends just shy of a grimace, a screaming war cry. It's just very, like, it's very visceral, and to those who can picture these things, it is like a horror scene in a way. But it is, to me, pieces like this are important because a lot of people, when they hear of like suicide, and when they hear of you know, these people when they take their own life, and they, it's kind of like we're programmed to kind of disregard it in a way, because it's like, okay, well, it's nobody that I knew, so it's not a big deal. But then if you really put yourself in that situation, like to really think about what happened, that's what this poem does. It puts you in the situation, and you basically have to sit there and endure this. It's like it's a tragedy, but it's also beautiful because it's done in a poetic way, and I don't know, it really raises like awareness of the brutality that goes into when someone is danced on the chalk line, so to speak. So yeah, this is a very well done piece and very vivid.
Thank you. Really appreciate the comments. I don't know, this is just kind of what came to mind when I thought of Red. I guess my thinking behind it was like, again, when I thought of Red, my mind instantly went towards lipstick shades, and then like a blood red lipstick kind of feeling is kind of the inspiration behind the right. Thank you guys for your comments. I really...
You have such intensity to your poetry. I love it.
Thank you. Where are we off to?
So that was the last one from the red theme. From now on, they're going to be to my contest vices. So the quote was, "The vices come as passengers, visit us as guests, and stay as masters," which was Confucius, the philosopher, who said that, I believe. And our first poem is by Damn It Dave. Robert, would you read that for us?
I'll give it a shot. Okay, Lechery's Wine by Damn It Dave. It says, "Fettered by the chains of iniquity, imprisoned by the warden of his vices, he is the eternal servant of his sins, hardwired for weakness, bound by the depth of corruption. His spirit forever treads water in a rolling sea of moral turpitude. Debauchery molders his unsavable soul through his hunger for depravity remains as insatiable as his thirst for lechery's wine." End poem.
Great read. This is a really interesting piece. Fettered by the chains of iniquity. So it's like this... the lecherousness, the vices, fed, you know, by chain, like held back by iniquity, which I found really interesting, you know, like the frustration of things not being fair are what lead to the vices, which I find an interesting concept, you know, eternal servant of his sins, so like a slave to sinning. You know, it's like a dark thought, you know, to be like a victim of your own vices. I love that as a concept. It kind of sets a pretty dark tone. I mean, even the title really sets the tone for this piece. A spirit treading water in a roiling sea of moral turpitude. You know, it's just like this spirit, like, just drowning in depravity. Really dark. But I love the aquatic nature of it, like that it's made into something really deep, you know, treading water, like just trying to stay afloat in a sea, you know, that only lasts so long. Like, you can't tread water forever. And then in the next stanza, its soul is declared as unsavable. You know, so it's lost. You know, treading all that water to not be saved and to still be depraved. It's really fascinating to me, you know, to just be like that much of a lech. It's just, it almost paints it as addiction, you know, to be addicted, like an alcoholic for sinning. So I really enjoyed it. It seemed really dark, which, I mean, it would be, but I think it conveys that well as a feeling.
I like the vocabulary he uses. Fettered, turpitude. I love the word debauchery. I know it's a fairly common word, but, like, debauchery always wins me over, which just sounds like I'm debaucherous myself. Which is debaucherous word. I don't know, but I like it. excellent word choices. I really liked the stanza, hardwired for weakness, bound by the debt of corruption. Hardwired for weakness is great, but bound by the debt of corruption, oh, I just love that line so much. I can't quite pinpoint why, but I was just like, yeah, as soon as I read that, I was like cheering along. I don't know why. Okay, apparently I am on the side of debauchery. Yeah, be corrupted. my little like black pom-poms out. as in be a cheerleader for, but yeah, okay. I'm going to shut up now.
Noted, a Faviata, fan of debauchery. I've always kind of liked the word debauchery too, because it sounds like this weird, like frilly, embellished Victorian word for like, you know, being immoral. Like they gave it like a fancy name. Like you can't just be like wicked or disturbed or depraved. No, it's debaucherous. It sounds, it's like sitting for rich people. Anyway, a wonderful comment. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. A lot of the language was intentional because people try to cover up their sins through fancy words and things like that. And Faziana is not alone in that debaucherous pool. I can assure that many people are on that route. But this reminded me like part of the it reminded me of part of the song of Hotel California when he says. It says we're just prisoners here of our own device, you know, and that's kind of like what along the lines of what they were talking about, like basically like the hardwired for weakness bound to the depth of corruption. I also was drawn to that stanza because it's inherent in our nature to want and to desire these things, and it's seen as weakness or corruption or immoral ineptitude, you know, moral ineptitude or whatever you want to call it, you know. But it's a lot of what is shunned is human base, you know, emotions and desire, you know. And I like the fact that Faziana said with his word choices, you know, turpitude and debauchery and molders and, you know, depravity and lechery. He used these words and he used them in like a very impactful way that kind of leaves an imprint on your mind as you read it, you know, and you can't help but be drawn in by it. And also feel sad in a way, but because it's very, this is people, you know, this is everybody. We're all chained to our vices. And, yeah.
I like your tie-in to the Hotel California. I definitely see that tie-in, you know, where it is just about being a prisoner to yourself, to your own like base desires. Weird side story about Hotel California is I used to work with a guy who had who's autistic, and he loved that song, but he literally thought it was about, like, going to a hotel. And so I remember having a really late night conversation with him once. We ended up at a party together where I explained, like, all the hidden meanings behind Hotel California. So that was a really fascinating night, like, explaining, like, the hidden meanings of Hotel California to somebody. You really challenge your own understanding of what something's about. But I do think you're right. It does kind of fall in that same vein of it's romanticized, but still dark. Oh, wonderful comment, Robert. What's next?
We have an audio from G.A. Grimm.
Don't Fall Down Now by G.A. Grimm. Stacking stones, they get pushed over. As they fall, I think of strawberries. The chains loosen, permitting a breath. A smile escapes, fleeing this place. The familiar caress returns, snapping me back. My gaze wanders, taking in the destruction. I pick up a rock and rub it, as if to wipe away failure, and perhaps imbue it with hope. I think the last I possess, muttering that this time will be different. I start stacking stones that get pushed over. As they fall, I promise to be better. Swear to them that I will knock them over no more.
Fantastic SoundCloud from G.A. Grimm. Really enjoy the way that he reads his own poetry. I think it makes such a big impact to hear a poem written in the author's voice and to know how they intended it to be read and how they hear it in their head. So thank you so much for the SoundCloud. I also love the way that a battle with addiction or a battle with vice is compared to stacking stones. You know, how a lot of people who go through recovery programs count the days since they last, you know, engaged in whatever their addiction is. And the imagery of comparing that to stacking stones and how, you know, the more days it's been, the taller this stone stack is, you know, the concept of it getting wobblier and wobblier, I think is really impactful. You know, and the repeated promise to yourself that, you know, that I'm going to do better and I'm going to do better and I can do it again. And just that constant battle. I think it's really well done here in this metaphor. I think it's a beautiful metaphor. And yet I find it really interesting too, that I think of strawberries, stacking stones that get pushed over as they fall. I think of strawberries. You know, why strawberries? I'm just very fascinated by that line because I don't see the connection. You know, to watch the stones fall and to think of a fruit. I'm just very fascinated by the line because the imagery is very strong for me and I'm not sure on the connection of that. And I wish I knew why strawberries. Like, it might be a very personal story or something, you know, referential there, but to me it's just a very interesting placement for the idea of strawberries. I also like the very, it feels very tactile to me, you know, the picking up the rocks and rubbing them as if to wipe away failure. Like, I can almost feel the stone in my hand, you know, the flat oblong style stone that you would choose to stack stones with, and just that kind of rubbing with a thumb. It's almost like a worry stone in a way, and I enjoy, like, that tactile feeling of this piece. I think it's beautifully done. Just that continual promise to yourself, you know, even as you fail. So I really enjoyed this write. Very well done. Thank you, G.A. Grimm. Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was looking at the thing with the strawberries, and what this is my interpretation is, when he says stacking stones, they get pushed over. As they fall, I think of strawberries, the chains loosen, permitting their breath. So, in my opinion, I would think, like, let's say, like, strawberry wine or alcohol or something, like as soon as he can't, when he fails and he pushes it over, he's in that euphoria again. You know, the chains loosen, permitting the breath. Now he can breathe because he's experiencing that that high or drunkenness or whatever it is that the person is feeling. Maybe the strawberries represent the flavor of their choosing, and that really takes them there. So that's the only thing that I can think of. But yeah, this is the Hidsaka was wonderful in depicting the pain and the struggle of the piece. And you know, this is a prominent thing in society nowadays because a lot of us are addicted to who knows what, you know, and it's very, like I said, humanistic and relatable. Like, you know, because me, it's, you know, caffeine and other things, you know. But that's just how it goes. We're all in this weird little marble of chaos and have to pick our poison, you know. And so I think he did a very good job in displaying just the rawness and the repetition and the futility. It seems as though it's futile, but you know, you can't escape at times if you're lucky. So I really liked his portrayal and depiction of this. It was heart-wrenching, but it was honest and it needed to be read.
I like your interpretation of the strawberries, you know, because as they fall, that means you're engaging in whatever your vice is. And so, you know, the insertion of something sweet, something pleasant, because I, you know, that's what it would be like, right? To have a moment of relief, you know, to not be struggling for a second. So that was an excellent comment. I think it helped me understand it better. So I really appreciate that. Susanna, your thoughts?
I just want to say that in the AN, it says inspired by the song Strawberry by Everclear. I think that has something to do with the story. I do not know that song, so it could go with your interpretations for sure. But later after the show, I will listen to Strawberry because I'm curious now how that connects to it all. I thought this was brilliant. It really reminded me of the Sisyphus myth where he's rolling the thing up the hill, and then as soon as he gets there, it rolls back down, and he has to do it over and over and over again, and it's like that frustration, which was a punishment in the story for him. But it feels that way with addiction, I imagine, where it's like this never-ending push that you're working at building it up just to have it fall down again, and that's punishment in your mind for your past behavior. It's a struggle, and I don't know, I just connected the rock with that story. But I think that the way that he does this is so well done. It's such a great metaphor. And Babbler, when you were talking about the AA kind of, or NA or whatever, help programs talking about how many days they've collected, my understanding, mostly from watching it on TV, is you get little chips that say how long it's been, poker chips. So I'm imagining them being stacked up, like you have all your little chips that show how long it's been, and then when you take a drink or do drugs or whatever it is, then they take it all, it's all gone. It all falls down. You have to start from the beginning. It's not like just one falls off. You're now at zero, and you got to do it all over again, building up those chips. And so those rocks are kind of like the chips, but prettier to picture. I really liked the section that says, I pick up a rock and rub it as if to wipe away failure and perhaps imbue it with hope. I think the last I possess. So it's like that last little bit of hope, putting it in to this rock that you're trying to clean it up because you're trying to clean up your life, and you're putting it down and hoping that it's strong enough to hold the next rock. It's like that first step needs to be strong, needs to be full of all your hope, because you need to survive that first day to be able to put another day on top of it. I just think that's such a powerful image. And it was a great audio. I mean, I always enjoy G.A. Grimm's voice, but in this one, he sounded so sad. Like, it really, the emotion hit you very hard in it. It's very expressive. So I'm really glad that he gave us an audio for this.
So I'm glad you read the I looked up Strawberry by Everclear, and it's about falling down and getting up again, which you can obviously see the correlation here. But they also reference crawling with my strawberry burns, which is like road rash from falling. So it gives it a new perspective, like that road rash bleeding from falling over and over again. So that sheds light on that and adds a new dimension to the piece. So glad you observed that this evening. What do we got up next?
I have one by Daniel Deschino that I'm trying to load. My internet's being a little bit slow, and by a little bit, I mean a lot, but that's okay. I got it now. I have to preemptively do things as we talk, or else it's too slow. Okay, here we go. The Spiderweb Need Only Wait for a Fly's Wrong Turn by Daniel Deschino. I have seen humanity fall, lost souls, wandering flesh, golems out of control from an inner control, bobbling bones in a spiritless body, as a serpent beheaded might still squirm. How can I judge when I've only just escaped capture? How can I ridicule when hypocrisy and arrogance are truly ridiculous? How can I preach when my life is but a declaration of sins and sorrows? I remember the day of early freedom, let loose from the chains of schooling, sorcery, and parental penalties, immersed in an image of immortality, and flooded with a confusing chemical concoction of which I still don't understand. It's amazing there are any responsible adults in the world at all, let alone that I'm supposed to be one of them. Temptation is an interesting adversary, for the world is its weapon. A desert world void of the healing rain of sympathy and sanctuary, and I am but a speck of dust in the sandstorm that is humanity's cravings. To think I'm smart, I would have to be a fool. To think I'm strong-willed, I have to be weak-minded. There is but one thing that has kept me out of the gutter, kept me in health and happiness, sent me the wisdom to recognize true love and family. The scourge of the scientific scene, the lost leprechaun of lore, the desperate hope of hopelessly desperate luck. End quote.
Great read of Faziana. I gotta say, in this one, the voice is really strong. Like, I feel like there's a character to this piece with, like, this, like, wry, cynical, laughing kind of character. That I find really interesting. You know, it feels like there's a fantasy bit to this, but it's not necessarily like it's rooted in fantasy. You know, the golems out of control, I picture as soulless people, you know, people that are hollow, you know, bobbling bones in a spiritless, as a serpent beheaded might still squirm. You know, the people are alive on the outside, but they're dead on the inside, having lost themselves. And I think that's a really interesting concept, you know, like a soulless person being a golem, which I enjoyed, you know. And then talking about how, you know, you're not, this isn't about judgment, you know, it's not how do I judge, you know, it can happen to anybody, you know, I'm not that hypocritical. You know, and the, when we're calling becoming an adult, you know, thinking, oh, I can live forever, I can be, you know, the best, I can do all of these things, and then realizing, like, I still don't know what the hell I'm doing, and I'm supposed to be an adult. You know, how do I avoid all of these pitfalls that lead all to these human golems, so to speak? You know, and then to rather widely come to the conclusion that it's just luck. You know, the score of the scientific scene, the lost lexicon of lore, and the desperate hope of the hopelessly desperate. It's just luck, not any by any choice or willpower, but just, you know, how it happened to be, which I think is a very open-minded way to look at, like, why I'm not an addict, you know? So I enjoyed this write. I felt like it was a bit of a character write, but I enjoyed the live voice of it. So thank you, Dana. Athesia, your thoughts?
I loved it. I think Daniel's wonderful. He has like a playfulness to this, where he's like, where is it? I would have to be, if I think I'm smart, I have to be a fool. To think I'm strong-willed, I have to be weak-minded. Like, he has this kind of like self-depreciating humor throughout the whole thing, and yet it has such a deep message. So you're kind of giggling along with it. But, you know, it says quite a bit. And I like a serpent beheaded might still squirm. So it's like, you know, things, even if you try to get rid of your vices, it's still going to be a thing within you, that you have that. It makes me think of the Hydra, cut off the head, more grow. I really liked the thing about adulthood. It's amazing that there are any responsible adults in the world at all, let alone that I'm supposed to be one of them. My mom and I were joking about that earlier today because I was like, I really don't feel like an adult. This is ridiculous. I'm like almost 40. And she was like, you used to bug me when you were a kid that I was too immature. And she was like, you never understood that I'm just like you. I never grew up. And I'm like, it's true. I basically become my mother. But how does anyone feel properly adulting? And just the idea of, like, when you finish school and when you have no parents who are telling you what to do anymore, what makes us behave? And I say this as someone who's actually, like, ridiculously behaved. Like, I will not cross if it's not a crosswalk. But in my mind... I'm ridiculous. I liked confusing chemical concoction too, and like the possible, you know, temptation of that, and you know, whether that's talking about drugs or alcohol or I don't know what. There tends to be that thing in your late teens, early 20s, where you're tempted to try things. And by what chance do you not become one of the people lost to it? And I like that he recognizes that a lot of it is luck. It's circumstances. It's not necessarily about self-control and choices all the time. Sometimes it's where you are at the right time, at the wrong time, at the right place or the wrong place. I like the way that he introduces luck, the scourge of the scientific scene, because we want there to be a reason for everything, but sometimes it's just luck. It was playful and yet serious, and I like that combination.
Yeah, I also really liked the kind of, you know, what makes me an adult concept. Because, yeah, you know, you don't really realize it until you are an adult. And I'm like, yeah, I still don't know shit. So, like, all those times my parents were like, I don't know. It really meant, I don't know. They weren't like withholding information. Like, you know, at some point you realize that. But, Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like the title, the spider need only wait for its, for a fly, you know, fly's wrong turn, because it's, the temptations are always there, and there's so many webs, you know, and they're always like something to get somewhere. And since we're so base as a, you know, as human beings, we will fall into one way or another. We just need to wait, you know, and I really appreciate that concept. But, also, the part where it says, how can I preach when my life is but a declaration of sin and sorrows? And it's like, you know, that basically sums it up right there. You know, a lot of people go with the whole holier-than-thou bullshit attitude, but, you know, it's like, dude, you know, don't be throwing stones from glass houses, et cetera, because everybody has something going on, and everybody... we didn't just end up this way. A lot of times some, you know, things led us here, and you don't know everybody's story. So that's why I like pieces like this, because it's like a bit of self-reflection also, and also to kind of point out the hypocrisy in people, you know, and this does both in spades. And there was a part about the snake. And I was thinking, it says, bobbing bones in a spiritless body as a serpent beheaded might still squirm. And for that, I thought of people, like, because serpents, a lot of times people are depicted as like snakes being sneaky or deceptive or lying. And if you catch them in the lie, you know, they're still going to try and get out of it and squirm, you know. So that's what it kind of brought to mind for me, but it could be a whole different thing. But yeah, like the visuals and the concepts that he instituted here, playfully and yet, I mean, utterly relatably, was genius. I thought this is like a fantastic poem. It's probably one of the best poems I've heard recently. So, yeah, thank you, Daniel, for sharing that. That was a whole lot of awesome.
The headless serpent line I also found. Just very powerful, just like that writhing was pretty visceral in this piece. I agree. Wonderful write from Daniel, and wonderful comment, Robert. So, Ephesiana, we have 7 minutes left. What would you like to do with them?
I think let's try to squeeze in one more. So can you read the one by Paul Thomas one, please?
Absolutely. This is who? Me? Who, I guess it's who? Me. My Paul Thomas one. You played on my desires in the beginning for recognition, affirmation, attention, and acceptance. You outnumber conscience and good judgment by many fold. You incite emotion while suppressing intellect. How I have wished for the ability to reverse your scheming, deceptive influence. Consequence, victim awareness, and a motivated pursuit for enlightenment brought you to it, brought an end to your reign. Yet you still persecute as if piety the sin. Come into my house one last time so I can fully renounce you together then one by one. One leans upon the merriment of sin until desert staked in noonday sun, friendless and in deep despair. End poem. This is a really more direct and powerful piece, in my opinion, than some of the other ones that we've read. You know, almost like scolding the vice, like being angry with it. You know, the playing on the desires, you know, making you feel good, you know, the recognition, affirmation, attention, and acceptance. And maybe it's directed as a person, but I don't think, you know, it needs to be. I think that's more in reference to the quote, you know, the vices come as passengers, visit us as guests, and stay as masters. You know, it's more of that personification, I think. you know, to then outnumber the conscience and good judgment, you know, so make you feel so good that you throw reason out the window, you know, suppress intellect, because, you know, it feels so welcoming, it feels so right at the beginning. But then the consequence comes, you know, you become aware of the fact that you're actually a victim, that, you know, this violence against you is wrong, that you're, you know, you've been manipulated by whatever the vice might be. But I love the strength of come into my house one last time so I can fully renounce you together then one by one, to just be like, no, you know, go ahead, come one more time so I can tell you that you're, I'm done, that I'm just, I'm done. And then the last stanza, you know, one leans upon the merriment of sin until desert staked in noonday sun, friendless and in deep despair. You know, that rock bottom, you know, it all seems like a good time until you're left out to dry, and all alone, and nothing's fun about it anymore. I thought this was a really powerful piece, really direct and like a gut punch of a write. So I enjoyed it very much, Paul Thomas. Your thoughts, Robert?
Well, I thought it could be about a relationship, and it could be about the general, you know, liars and manipulators. And I also thought it could be about, like, certain people leading, like, the masses or a cult, like a politician. But mainly the reason why is because it says, you outnumber conscience and good judgment by many fold. You incite emotion while suppressing intellect. So, you know, the leading of the charge, like, you know, you're making your idiocy known, but it doesn't even matter, is because it's, you know, emotion is what's taking charge, and there's no reason to stop it if all you are is, you know, emotional about it, because emotion a lot of time trumps logic. So, you know, that's how it works. And I thought that like you said, it was very hard hitting and powerful, like when it says consequent victim awareness and a motivated pursuit for enlightenment brought you to an end to your reign. So basically, you know, you did this to yourself. You know, you through all of your terrible actions, they have led to your demise, and I'm willing to be the one to show you the door to it, you know. So yeah, very powerful and you know, on point.
Appreciate that it's as punchy as it is, and the door is left open to, like, is it like a horrible abusive relationship? Because it's still quite a quite a possibility, and that still is a vice. So, wonderful comment. Athesiana, your thoughts?
I liked both of your comments. You know, I think it could either be taken as him talking to the vices themselves, or like Robert was saying, it also applies for, you know, people who spur on the vices of others, stirring up their emotion and like putting down intellect. We are out of time, unfortunately. We will be back again next week. Well, I will. Babbler's going to be away. And thank you so much, Babbler, for your inspiring quotes. Thank you, Robert, for calling in. Thank you to everybody who wrote for our contests. And we hope that we hear from you again soon. We will, of course, have more contests, so keep an eye on allpoetry.com.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.